Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nuntet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the items enumerated in the Mishnah that have a bracha of Shekocho Gvurato Male Olam, and it goes through each one of them discussing what exactly it is. And now it begins, Vazvaot, Maizvaot. What exactly is this vaot? Amar Rav Ketina Goha. It is an earthquake. Rav Ketina Havka Azel Borcha. He was traveling. Kimata Pitcha Debei Uba Tamyo. He reached the doorway of a necromancer. Those that practice the Baal Ov, divine with the dead. Right as he reached that point, Gnach Goha. There was, as Rashi says here, a major earthquake. That's why you have a duplicate Lashon. As Rashi says, V'tig'ash V'tir'ash. But it was an extremely powerful earthquake. So, Amar, sounds like he asked this rhetorically. Miyada obatamya haigoa mahu. Does the Balov know why all of a sudden there was an earthquake? Ramalei Kala, all of a sudden he hears a voice from inside of this house that has the necromancy going on inside of it. And says, Katina, Katina, amai lo yadano. You didn't know why? Shasha Kodesh Baruch Hu zocheret banav shishruim bitzar. When Kodesh Baruch Hu remembers his children that are in difficult straits, Beinu Mot Olam, being dispersed amongst all the nations of the earth, Morid Shtei Dema'ot Yamagadol. He has two tears that drop into the great ocean. Bekolo Nishma Misof Olam Ve'ad Sofo. And the reverberations of those tears hitting the water are what causes the earthquake, and it's felt from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. Final Goha. And that's the explanation behind an earthquake. Amar Rav Ketina. So Rav Ketina responds to the Balov. Obadamiyot Kadivu. He is a liar, this Balov. Umile Kadivin. And everything that he says is a falsehood. Ihochi, if what he said was true, Goha, Goha, Miboile. There should have been two earthquakes because there are two tiers. One tier, then a second tier drops, and that should have caused two earthquakes and not one earthquake. Velohi, and the truth is that that's not true, what Rav Ketina said. Goa goi avi. In essence, there were two earthquakes that took place. Whether he's speaking about an earthquake and its aftershock, or he's speaking about in the earthquake itself, that there's a number of trembles or rumblings that take place. Nevertheless, Rav Ketina refused to acknowledge that which the Baal Ov was saying, that people didn't start following it, thinking that this Balov has the real answers, or there's something real about this Balov. And therefore, Rav Ketina dismissed what it said by saying something that undermined what they were saying, despite the fact that actually that's what had transpired, and the explanation was a decent explanation for what happened in terms of the earthquake. And over here, this Gemara sounds a little more like those positions within the Rishonim that believe that when it comes to these dark forces, that they do have a certain amount of power, and they do have a certain amount of insight. We're not allowed to use them, or they can't bring context to that which they know, and therefore it's not information that's useful to us because it can't be understood properly. But nevertheless, there is some sort of power or understanding that comes from the Baal Ov, but the Torah restricts us from doing this. As opposed to the more rationalist explanations of like the Ibn Ezra, the Rambam, who believe that these powers are meaningless. They're all a forgery, and they are using illusionary tactics to convince people of their powers, but there's nothing real behind them. Here from the Gemara, it makes it sound like that there is something real to it, and despite the fact that there's something real to it, we don't want people getting caught up in it, and Ever Rav Ketina dismisses it. That's more along the lines of like the Ramban and the Radak brings both positions, and if you want to see more detail about it, we discuss it when the Gemara discusses Baal Ov in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, but also you can see the Radak in the Shmuel Aleph when Shaul goes to visit the Balat Ov in order to get information before he goes to the battle in the Gilboa where he dies. Over there, the Radak speaks pretty extensively about this issue as to whether there's anything real to the Baal Ov. Now, Rav Ketina Didei Amar, Rav Ketina himself gives a different explanation for it. If that's the case, this would sound a little bit more like those rationalist explanations that say that even though the dismissal by Rav Ketina of Baal Ov was not really a true dismissal, nevertheless, he didn't think that was the right explanation. And here he gives the right explanation. Didei Amar, Sopek Kapav. It's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu claps his hands. Shenemar, because it says in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Gamani Ake Kapi El Kapi, I will clasp or clap my hands together, v'hanichoti chamati, and that will relieve my anger. So it is a expression of God's anger being relieved, and that's what the clapping of his hands does, and that clapping of his hands reverberates in the earthquake. Rabbi Natan Omer, ancha mit aneach. that Hashem gives a big sigh, and that sigh is what causes the earthquake, Shenamar. Bring another pasuk from Yechezkel earlier on, where Hashem is speaking about what he's going to do to the peoples of Yerushalayim, and there it says, Vanichoti chamati, that I will relieve my anger bomb on them, v'hi nechamti, and then I will be consoled. In the other case, the release of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger is because he had clapped his hands together. And therefore, hanichoti is really a assuaging of the anger because he's already clapped his hands together. Over here, it's hanichoti chamiti bam. I relieve my anger on them, which means that they will be the recipients of God's anger. And then, vihinei chamti, and then I would be consoled. And they're reading hanichoti, that relief of anger, as a great sigh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives out. And that's what causes the earthquake. Rabbanan amrei, and the Rabbanan suggests it's boit barakia. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu stomping his feet on the firmament, Shenamar, because it says in the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, and that's in the context of a very negative nevuah by Yirmiyahu in Perichav Hei, where he discusses that I've already been prophesying to you since the time of Yoshiyahu HaMelech for 13 years now. Now we're in the middle of the reign of Yoyakim, and I'm telling you now that Hashem is going to bring terrible destruction. And the pasuk that we quote says over here, Tina Be'alehem, prophesy against them. Et kol advarim eile, everything I'm saying, umarta lehem, Hashem mimaro mishag, God from above is going to roar, umimon kocho iten kolo, and from his holy abode, you will hear his voice, shaog ishag al navehu, he's going to mightily roar on his place, heidad, great, a great shout, kedorchim, like those that are pressing the grapes, ya'ane el kol yoshvei aretz, and that will be heard by all the inhabitants of the land. And then the next pasuk continues, Basha'onad k'tzei aretz, and noise shall come from the ends of the earth. So you see that God is saying something very powerful is about to happen, and the description of it includes this heidad, doke dorchim, shouting out like the stomping of those that press the grapes. And so then the Gemara correlates that with the stomping on the firmament, which then produces the earthquake, which seems to be somewhat hinted to in the next pasuk, which is that there's a noise, or a great noise that goes, that comes from the ends of the earth. Rav Acher bar Yaakov Amar, Rav Yaakov suggests that the earthquake is a result of Docheket Raglav Tachat Kisei HaKavod. When God moves his feet or rubs his feet together below his throne, Shenemar, the pasuk from Yishayahu that we read on Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, Ko Amar Hashem HaShemayim Kisei, the heavens are my throne, Ba'aretz Odom Raglai, and the earth is my footstool. And so when HaKadosh Baruch Hu moves his feet on the footstool, that again has reverberations that precipitate an earthquake down below. Now, just as a broad comment about this, which is probably true of many of the things that we're going to see on today's daf, the Gemara knows that the earthquakes are caused by a natural phenomenon, but what the Gemara is trying to understand is what is the metaphysical cause for that which is a physical phenomenon that takes place in the world. And obviously an earthquake is a destructive force that's unleashed. And so the Gemara sees that associated with the anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the question that they're discussing or disagreeing about is what is exactly the anger or the pain could be a chol HaKadosh Baruch Hu is experiencing that is the cause for that destructive force to be released. And so the argument here is about the cosmic implications of physical phenomena, especially destructive ones that take place down on earth, that they don't come in a vacuum, that they're part and parcel of a greater cosmic interrelationship that precipitates this type of outcome because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to send a message, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu is upset, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry. And over here, the Chachamim are trying to understand which of those items is really the precipitating event for something as destructive as an earthquake. Vala Ramim, which is thunder. The Gemara wants to know, Mai Ra'amim. Over here, the Mai Ra'amim is not necessarily what is thunder, but what is the cause for thunder. Amar Shmuel Ananei Begalgalo. It has to do with the clouds touching the sphere that's around the earth. This is true here, and we'll see later on in the Gemara, it'll come up as well, which is that the belief at the time by the Chachamim was that there was this fixed either cap or sphere that was around the earth, and fixed into that sphere were the stars or the constellations. And those constellations, which stay in place all the time, they move because the Galgal during the seasons of the year turns. And by turning it, the constellations move around the earth. And therefore, you'll see different parts of the constellations on different sides, north or south, east or west, during different seasons of the year. But that was all because there was this Galgal or Kippah that covered over the earth that had fixed in it all of these stars. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the clouds that are moving through the sky, either, according to Rashi, brings two explanations. The clouds bump up against this galgal, and that's what causes the sound. Or they got caught in the galgal, and the galgal pulls them, and they can't release from it, and that's what causes the sound of the thunder, shenamar. And then they bring a proof from the pasuk in Tehillim, kol ra'amecha, your thundering voice, big galgal, comes in a whirlwind, he'iru birakim tevel, lights up the world with lightning, ragza vitirash, it trembles and it shakes. So the Gemara sees this as the source for the fact that the kol ra'am, and connects it to the galgal, which in the literal translation means like a whirlwind, but over here, the Gemara is connecting it to the galgal that holds the constellations above, and that the sound of the thunder comes from the interaction with the galgal. Rabbanan Amre, Rabbanan suggests that the thunder is caused by Anane de Shavche Mayel Adodi, from the clouds pouring or moving water from one to the other. Shenamar, they quote the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, speaking about God's great power and creation that he put the world together with. The pasuk before it says, Oseh Eretz B'Kocho, Mechin Tevel B'Chachmato, he made the earth by his power, he established the world through his wisdom, Utvunato Natashamayim, and with his understanding or discretion, he has stretched out the heavens. And then we bring the pasuk here, the Kol Tito Hamon Mayim B'Shamayim V'Yele Nisim Mekzei Haaretz. Then his voice resounds with the great flows of water in the heaven, and he raises Nisim, or clouds, or vapors, Mekzei Haaretz, from the ends of the earth, Barakim L'Matar Asah, makes lightning for the rain, Biyotzei Ruach Matzrutav, and he takes the wind from his storehouse. It's in the context of a thunderous storm, and over there it speaks about the movement of the waters, the great voice, or the great sound that is heard by the movement of the masses of water in the heavens. And therefore they associate the thunder with the movement of water from the clouds to different clouds. Vachar b'Yaakov amar, Barka takifa debarik ba'anana umitvar gziza debarzo. So he suggests that the thunder is a result of a very strong or powerful lightning strike on the clouds that breaks off or severs off a piece of ice or hail from the cloud. Vashi amar, anane chalchule mechalchule, that the clouds are actually hollow or have holes in them, v'atazika, and the wind comes, u'menasheva pumayu, and blows over the openings, v'dame kazika pumdane, and it's similar to the wind that blows on the top of the open barrels, or people do this today with bottles. If you blow over the top of a bottle, it creates a sound. Similar over here, when the wind moves over these hollow parts of the clouds, or the openings in the clouds, it creates this loud sound, which is the thunder. And the Gemara says, mistavrak Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Rav Acha bar Yaakov's position or explanation seems to me the most plausible, the barik barko umenahame anane va'ate mitra, because the lightning flashes, the clouds rumble, and then the rain falls or comes down. So that phenomenon of the precipitation coming after the lightning and the thunder is produced or can be explained by what Rav Acha bar Yaakov suggests. And on the winds, as Tosfo points out over here, the Rishami says that you say the bracha of kokol vrato meholam, it's only kishibayim v'zam. It's only when you have extreme forms of wind, not when it's typical or regular forms of wind, then you would only say Oseh Maaseh Breshit. But when these powerful winds come, that's when you say Shekocho Gvurato Mele Olam. And the Gemara again says, My Ruchot. Seemingly the question in the light of what Tosfot says is, what is this type of powerful wind that would require Shekocho Gvurato Mele Olam? Am Rabaye Zafa. It's something that comes with hurricane-like force. Vamar Baig Mire de Zafa Bileli Alohavi. That type of wind doesn't come at night. Vaka chazina dave, we see that it does come at night. It says, how dat chule biyomuma, only if it started during the day, and then it continues into the night. Vamar abayi gmire de zafa tarte shai lokoi. So we also have a mesora that a zafa or a hurricane won't last persistently for more than 2 hours. The kayim mashine emar, to be mekayim, that which it says in the pasuk in Nachum. In the context there, it's speaking about the great power of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the pasuk quoting is, ma techashvun el Hashem, kalahu oseh. What are you planning against Hashem? Hashem will obliterate anything in his way. Lo takum pa'amayim tzara. No affliction or difficulty will rise up a second time against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So this idea that a Kodesh Baruch Hu brings one powerful sweeping wind that does all the destruction that he wants, and it doesn't need to come again. Again says, V'chachazina dekoi. We see that it does persist for 2 hours. It says it's only the mafsik beni ubeni. Only if there's a respite in the interim does that happen. V'alabrakim omer baruch shekhochol gruato male olam. On lightning, you make this bracha. Again, my brachim. What exactly is lightning over here? There are different forms of lightning, and what exactly is the lightning that we're speaking about? What's the lightning that necessitates a bracha on it? Amarova barka. It's a lightning, Rashi says over here, Lashon Mavrik Nahar. Something that lights up. This might be in contrast to what Rashi said in the previous Gemara. There he said barka that split off the ice blocks. He called that brachim shel esh, fiery lightning. And that might have reference to a lightning bolt. If you do say that, maybe Rava's coming to dispel what Rashi said before, which is, you might have thought that you only have to make a bracha on a lightning that is like fire, or that's like a lightning bolt that precedes the thunder, but not the smaller flashes of lightning that come afterwards. And Rava comes along to say that even those smaller flashes of lightning also require a bracha. Vama Rava. Then Rav also says, Barka Yechida, even a single lightning bolt, Ubarka Chivara, or a white lightning, Ubarka Yerukta, or a greenish-blue lightning, Vananei Desalkan Bekeren Maravit, clouds that seem to rise or go up on the western corner, Vajin Bekeren Dromit, and they come from the southern side, Petarte Ananei Desalkan, or two clouds that seem to either be rising together or bumping into each other, Charalape Charverta, Kulan Kashian. All of those are bad omens or simanim that what's upcoming is not going to be something that is a brocha, but rather destructive. Lamai Nafkamina. Why does it matter that you know that information? Lamibai Rachme, so that you know to daven in advance of what's about to come, because you know that there's impending doom that's ahead, and therefore maybe you can beseech Hashem to stop it. V'hani milei belelya. That's only true if this transpires during the night. Avo b'tzafro, if it's happening during the day, late behu mashasha, then there's no problem or it's not an issue, because, as we're saying here, Amar Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Yitzchak, hani ananei d'tzafro, the clouds of the morning, late behu mashasha. They have no real substance to them. D'chtiv, because the pasuk in Hosea says, what am I going to do with you, Ephraim? Because your goodness is like a morning mist or a cloud of the morning that dissipates easily, meaning that your goodness doesn't really have any lasting side to it. And the puzzle finishes off, and like the morning dew that burns off easily, so it's not something that has any lasting side to it, it's ephemeral, and therefore the clouds of the morning are not omens of impending doom because there's no real substance to clouds. Isn't there a common saying, Kamiftach Bave, if you open up the door in the morning, Mitra, and you see raining outside, Barchamra Mochsakech, lay down your sack, you donkey driver, Begani, and go back to sleep, because you're not going to find any parnosa out that day, because the produce is going to be super cheap, because all the rains give lots of produce, and therefore there's no reason for you to ship things from different locations to try to make money from the differential in pricing from one location to another location, because everywhere is going to have plentiful or bountiful food. Everything's going to sell for cheap, and therefore there's no reason for you to get out of bed. So that makes it sound like there's negativity associated with that rain or those clouds that are seen in the morning. It says, Lokasha, Adakater Biva. Depends how the cloud cover looks. If there's a heavy, stormy cloud cover, then that's no different than the clouds you would see at night. Then if they are these thinner clouds that come out in the morning, then those clouds don't have the same predictive power in terms of telling you that there's something bad or difficult about to happen. Amar Rav Alexandri, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, lo nivru'u re'amim. Thunder was only created, elo lifshot akmimut shebelev, in order to straighten out the crookedness of one's heart. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Velukim asa shivyu milifanav, because God created that which is there in order that they be fearful of him. And they see the thunder as being a manifestation of that. The Rashba seems to indicate that that's not only true of thunder, but also true of lightning as well. Those are the types of things that are shocking to an individual. They scare the individual, and therefore they have this impact of engendering fear that helps a person do tshuva, brings a person to doing tshuva. Although one could understand why you would focus on thunder, because it's something that even though you can't see it, you could suddenly be shocked with that sound of thunder, and many times it makes a person jump in their place because the thunder is so loud or so sudden or shocking. So that's the type of thing that causes fear in the person, and the point of that fear is constructive fear, that it should cause a person to do tshuva and straighten out the crookedness of their heart. But there are others who believe that this statement is reflective not only on the thunder, but also on all the items that we mentioned until now. And that might have a nafkamina l'alocha as to whether the type of thunder you need in order to make a brocha has to be a thunder that's shocking and powerful, or is it simply any thunder? If thunder is unique in the sense that it's built for straightening out the kimunta leiv, then you make a brocha on any thunder. If you believe that it's like all the other items that we mentioned here, then it would only be in cases like earthquakes, powerful winds, and lightning. All of those items together are things that are powerful and demonstrate great power, and therefore you'd make the bracha of kokol gvurato me'alei olam. In that case, maybe you wouldn't make a bracha on small or rolling thunder. And interesting enough, the Magen Avraham paskins in Siman Samach Vav, things that you're allowed to interrupt Kriyat Shema for, as we saw in the beginning of the Masechta, Mafsikim Mipnei HaKavod, and there it's talking about Kavod Shel Basar Vadam, then certainly it would be Mafsik for Kavod Shamayim. And the Magen Avraham sees the thunder and lightning as manifestations of God's kavod in the world, and therefore one could interrupt the middle of Kriyat Shema to say a brocha on lightning or thunder because of that. Rama Rabbi Alexandri, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, so we have another memra from this same pair. Aroe et akeshet ba'anan. Someone who sees a rainbow in the clouds, tzarich shipol panav, has to fall on his face. Shinemar. So they quote from the Maaseh Merkava, which is the beginning of Yechezkel, which is a Gilui Shechina. And it says there about the Gilui Shechina, Kemarei HaKeshet Asher Yeh Ba'anan. The vision that Yechezkel has is like a rainbow that you would see in a cloud. Ve'ereh. And then Yechezkel sees this, Ve'apol Al Panai. And I fell on my face. So you would imitate that behavior of Yechezkel, because this is a type of Gilui Shechina. And given that there's a Gilui Shechina, you should fall on your face. Light Allah B'marova. In Eretz Yisrael, they curse people who follow this practice. Shundemechse, Kemad Asagid L'Kashto. Because it looks like a person's bowing down to the rainbow. Aval bruche vade mivarech. But they do acquiesce that there is validity in making a brocha on the keshet, even though they would not condone bowing down at the time that you see this keshet in the anan. My mivarech. What's the brocha that you make on the keshet that's in the anan? Boreuch zucher abrit. That Hashem who remembers the covenant. The covenant here it's being references the covenant between Akash Baruch Hu and Noach when he says that the keshet would be an ubrit between Akash Baruch Hu and mankind. But nita tano, in a bright that we have from Rabbi Yishmael Benosh Rabbi Yochanan and Broka Omer, neman bibrito v'kayam b'ma'amaro. He is faithful in his covenant and he stands by his word. Amar Papa, so as we saw earlier in the Masechta and we discussed once before, Papa is this ultimate compromiser. And once again here, Rapapa tries to accommodate everyone and says, Hilkach nimru l'tavayu. We should say both of them. Baruch zocher abrit. V'ne'eman b'rbito, v'kayam b'ma'amaro. There's a question as to whether Ne'eman should be with a vav or without a vav, and that's a discussion by the Gra in Orach Chaim with regards to that. The fact that Rav Papa brings them together means that there must be different aspects, and it's not just a duplication of the same thing, and that Zocher HaBrit is different than Ne'eman b'rbito, v'kayam b'ma'amaro. There are two different aspects over here. One is Zocher HaBrit, which is that Akash Baruch Hu remembers the covenant that he has, and that we'll explain in a second what that means, that the rainbow is indicative of that covenant that was made long ago. But there's also an other aspect of that, which is Ne'eman b'rbito, v'kayam b'ma'amaro. Not only is this just a sign that there is such a brit, but there's also an aspect of it that Hashem is faithful in his keeping of this covenant, which would imply that the rain that comes at certain times, Hashem is angry enough that he would want to destroy us, or he would want to bring even more. And the rainbow indicates that Hashem has made that covenant, or stands by that covenant, that he won't bring a mabul again to destroy the whole world. And so the rainbow has both aspects of that. And that's reminiscent of that which the Rishonim speak about with regards to the rainbow in Parshat Noach. That might relate to what the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban say on the Pasuk in Parshat Noach, Perek Tet, Pasuk Yudbet, where they ask, isn't the rainbow a natural phenomenon? So the refracting of the sunlight through the droplets of the rain, and that causes a rainbow to happen. So how could something that's a natural phenomenon be an oath? Again, here you could answer like we said before, which is, yes, these are a natural phenomenon, but we're trying to explain the metaphysical aspects of these natural phenomenon. So both of them bring over their opinions that the rainbow did not exist from the time of creation, but was added to the creation at that time. And that's what it means, that it's an oath now. It's an oath because God now entered this into the Briah, that this would be the phenomenon that takes place. Then the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra both suggest that maybe it was there from the time of creation, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just pointed to the rainbow, even though it's a natural phenomenon, as being the oath. That will be the sign that we have this covenant between us, similar to other items or piles of rocks or different things that people put as a siman. It's not the covenant itself. It's just a reminder of the covenant that we have between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, when we see it, we're reminded of the fact that God was kind to us and gave us this covenant, and he stands by that covenant. And the Ramban says the reason that that is the sign is because the bow of the rainbow faces away from earth rather than towards earth. That's an indication that the arrows are not being shot down, rather they're being turned back. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to destroy the world. Now the Gemara moves on to the next section of the Mishnah, which are natural phenomena that we say, Oseh Maaseh Breshitan, and we don't say, Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam. And the Gemara says, Atu Kohani Damran Adhashta Lab Maaseh Breshit Ninu. All of these phenomena that we saw before, are they not also Maaseh Breshit, Vaktiv, that which we say every Shabbat, Brakim Lamatar Asah, Hashem made lightning to bring down rain, and so Hashem created the lightning, so it is a part of the Oseh Maaseh Breshit. And so then why would you only make the bracha before and say the group before is Kochol Gvurato Olam, distinguished from the group over here, which has Oseh Maaseh Breshit on it? Amar Abaye, Kroch V'Tani. Combine the two sections, and yes, the brachot apply to both of them. And Rashi concludes on that, Val Kulam Shtei Brachot Alalu. On all of these, you'd make both brachot, both Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam and Oseh Maaseh Breshit, meaning that now we're going to combine the two lists together as if they're one big list. Rav Amar, Hota Mivarech Tarte. Over there, by the first list, where it's Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam, you make both brachot, Baruch Shekochol Gvurato Malei Olam, Oseh Maaseh Breshit, in that first list. Hocha, in this latter list, Oseh Maaseh Breshit, Iko, there is Maaseh Breshit, Kochol Malei Olam, Leka. And as Rashi explains over here, that's because when you're making a bracha on the mountains, you don't see all the mountains, you're seeing one mountain of many mountains, and so yes, that's part of creation, but it's not Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam. It doesn't demonstrate or display the great power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or in essence, as we explained it on the Mishnah, Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam is something that affects many people or is obvious to many around. Whereas the mountain is a personal experience. When you're there, you're seeing this object, and therefore it's Oseh Maaseh Breshit, but not Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam. So for Rashi, the statement of Abaye is that you make both brachot. Rava says that's only true of the first list, you make both brachot. In the second list, you only make one bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breshit. But nevertheless, even in conclusion, if we pass on like Rava, for those items in that first list, you would make both brachot of Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam Oseh Maaseh Breshit. Then the Baal Tosafot explained the Gemara differently, and they say over here that you mevarech shtayim, it means oh hi, whichever one you want. And so does the Rif say this. The Shtayim doesn't mean you say both brachot, but rather either or. So in the first list, you have a choice. You can make the bracha of Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam, or you can make the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breshit. The second list, you only have the option to say Oseh Maaseh Breshit. So the Loch of the Taz says that the Minog Olam is to make Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam on thunder, and to make Oseh Maaseh Breshit on lightning. But then the Magen Avraham says, but if thunder and lightning come together, then you only make one bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breshit. On the other hand, based on Rashi and other Rishonim like the Raivin and the Rashba, it would seem to imply that both on lightning and thunder, you'd make both brachot. Nevertheless, the Locha, we only make one bracha on each of them. And the Aruch HaShulchan just points out that there is this mistaken minhag of people that after they see lightning, they wait to hear thunder in order to be certain that the lightning is really lightning from a storm and not just result of the heat outside. They then make two brachot. They make the bracha Shkoko Vruatom Aleilam and Oseh Maaseh Breshit. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, based on what the Baal HaTosafot is suggesting and the way the Taz and the Magen Avraham are explaining, that'd be a bracha Levatala. Because once you make the one bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breshit, or Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam, one of those two brachot is motzi, both for lightning and for thunder. And therefore, it's better to make the Oseh Maaseh Breshit, which many believe is associated with lightning, and you can't make Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam, versus thunder, where you can make the Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam, as we saw before, because that's the sign of God's power, and might be the difference between those opinions that think that the natural phenomenon are made to Lifshot Akimimot Liv Adam. If that's only applicable to thunder, is it applicable to the other items? And that would maybe create some of this differentiation as to whether you say Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam by lightning or only by thunder. And therefore he suggests, the Aruch HaShulchan, that you should make the bracha of Oseh Maaseh Breshit immediately with the lightning. And later on, when you hear the thunder, you say Kochol Gvurato Malei Olam. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Aroya Rakia b'tarata. Someone who sees the firmament in its blue and pure state, Omer Baruch Hosem Aseh Breshit. Then you make a brocha of Hosem Aseh Breshit. Ematai. When is that true? Amar Abaye ki ata mitra kule lelya. It's when it's been raining and cloud covered the entire night. Ubitzafra ata istano magliduhu. All of a sudden in the morning a wind comes and clears everything out, and all of a sudden you see this clear blue sky. And Rashi claims over here that it's Hosem Aseh Breshit because shekach haita briyato v'harkach hiso ananim. In the beginning, the firmament was plain and clear, and only afterwards did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the clouds that then covered it. And therefore you make the bracha of Hosem Aseh Breshit. Upligle d'Rafravam bar Papam Rav Chista, but that disagrees with this position. D'Amar Rav Afravam bar Papam Rav Chista miyom shecharab Beit HaMikdash, on the day that Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, lo nireh yirakia b'tarata, the rakia has never seen its pure state. Shenamar, because the Pasuk says in Yishayo about the destruction that Hashem is going to bring upon Bnei Yisrael in the Churban HaBayit, albish shamayim kadrul, the heavens will be clothed or cloaked in black. The sakasim ksutam, and sackcloth will be their clothing. So you see that the cosmic implications of the Churban HaBayit are that even the skies or the heavens are mourning over the loss of the Beit HaMikdash and the punishment of Bnei Israel. And therefore, from the time of the Churban HaBayit, you won't have this ability to see it. If that's the case, then you can never make the bracha with Semaseh Breshit, because you won't experience it. Tanu Rabanan, Haroeh Chama B'Tkufata. One who sees the sun where it was created, as Rashi notes over here, when the sun has done enough cycles so that it's back to the same place and the same time where it was created. Although the Rabbeinu B'chai says that Chama B'Tkufata means the sun at strongest point of the year, which would be the summer solstice, the Tkufat Tammuz, and not Tkufat Nisan. Levana B'Gvurata. You see the moon in its full force. It's very hard to understand what that means. There is an alternate girsa, which is lavana bitaharata, which some explain to mean that it is the lavana in its fullness, meaning a full moon. And then that might then relate to the chama bitkufata. Chama bitkufata means spring equinox at the time that it was created, if it coincides with the full moon, which then makes it that it is, accentuates the tidal flows then, because you have both the pole of the sun and the moon at that time. Maybe that's why there is an extra brocha at that time. Others suggest that levana b'gvurata means the levana when it's new, which then might be referencing to Birkat HaLevana that we make each month. And still others suggest that levana b'gvurata might be something like a supermoon. That's when you make the brocha, despite the fact that it's mentioned here in the Gemara, Bekochavim bimisilotam, whether it means the stars, the planets in their orbits, umezalot kisidran, and the mazalot when they are in place. Rashi connects all this back to Aroma Chama B'Tkufata. There are those like the Shari Tshuva that say, aside from Chama B'Tkufata, we don't know the calculations of any of these other items, and therefore we don't make brachot on them. Nevertheless, the bracha that is made on this is Baruch Oseh Maseh Breshit. That is the bracha that you make because, at least with regards to the sun, it's back at the point where it was at creation. Ve'emat havi. How often does this happen and when does this happen? Amar Abaye, kol kav chet shanim. It happens every 28 years. Vahadar machzor. And therefore the cycle comes back. Naflat tufat nisan. The spring equinox, the spring season begins b'shabtai, when Saturn is at the beginning of the day. Ba'orta detlat nagi arba. At the end of Tuesday, going into Wednesday. So this requires a lot of explanation. The Gemara is referencing the fact that the creation of the sun, the moon, and the stars, and the constellations took place on Wednesday. And therefore the assumption is that the beginning of Wednesday is when it happened. Given that it happened at the beginning of Wednesday, when the sun returns to that point where it was on the beginning of Wednesday, then you make the bracha of Hosem Aseh Breshit, which is what we otherwise know as Birkat HaChama, that happens every 28 years, which we'll explain in a second. Where exactly the sun was at that moment is also subject to a machloket rishonim, because are we talking about that moment in Yerushalayim? Or was it the sun in the middle of the sky in Yerushalayim when this happened at the beginning of wherever you think, whether it's 6 hours east or 12 hours away from Yerushalayim when this began? Again, so this is all figures into how you would calculate where this happened. Rashi gives us some calculation here, which is that there are 7 planetary orbits. It's not exactly planets, because included in this list are Chama and Levana, or the sun and the moon, but it speaks about a cycle of these orbits that move 7 at a time. And the cycle, as Rashi explains over here, is Shabtai, which is Saturn, Tzedek, which is Jupiter, Ma'adim is Mars, Then Chama is sun, Noga is Venus, Kochav is Mercury, and Levana is the moon. So starting on the beginning of Wednesday, which means Tuesday night, when Wednesday comes in, starting at that time, every hour, one of these planets is in their orbit for that hour. And when the orbit of the Shabtai, Saturn, coincides with the sun's setting on that day, then that's the point of creation. So that moment of creation on Tuesday night going into Wednesday was the spring equinox. So that's Tekufat Nisan. So Tekufat Nisan, to coincide with the beginning of Wednesday, when the Shabtai in the orbit then at that sunset, in order for us to do Birkat Levana, we need all of those three events to coincide again. In order to have that happen, you need 28 years, and that's because a solar year is 365 and a quarter days. 364 is divisible by 7, which is 52, and then you have a day and a quarter left over. So that means that every year, the equinox is pushed off 1.25 days. In order for you to get back to the point where you have a whole day, and Shabtai is at the beginning of that time when you have the equinox, that will take you 4 years. That's because 4 times 1.25 gives you 5 days. So 5 whole days means that after 5 years, you will actually have Shabtai be the beginning of the nighttime, Saturn be the beginning of the nighttime, and it'll be the equinox. The only problem is that it won't be on a Wednesday, because it'll be 5 days later, and 5 days from Wednesday will land you on the beginning of Monday, but we know that the creation happened on Wednesday. So in order for you to get it back to this same Wednesday at the beginning of the day and be the equinox, you'd have to go another 7 cycles to get it back to that original cycle time. So if it takes 4 years to get it back to the beginning of the day, whereby Shabtai coincides with the beginning of the day and the equinox, it will take another 7 times of 4-year cycles for you to get it back to the point where Shabtai will be at the beginning of a Wednesday, and that will be the spring equinox, and then that would coincide with the original placement of where the sun was at the moment of creation. So given that, it takes 28 years for this cycle to take place in order for you to get the solar cycle to return to the same day, the same time, and the same planetary orbit is there, which is Shabtai. It takes 28 years. So these planetary orbits go in cycles of 7 hours, and the one that falls out at the beginning of the night is the one that coincides or is in the same orbit as the sun setting at that point. And then 12 hours later, the sun rises with another one of those planetary orbits, and whichever is 12 hours later will rise with the sun. And then that will be the name of that day associated with that planetary orbit. So the night is associated with one planetary orbit, or the sunset is associated with one, and the sunrise is associated with another. And as Rashi points out over here, the acronym for that is Katznash Chalam. The first week in creation, Mercury was there at the sunset on day 1. Tzedek, or Jupiter, was there on day 2. Noga, which is Venus, was there on day 3. Day 4 had Shabtai, which is Saturn, which is the one that we're looking for in terms of the creation of the sun. On Thursday, it was Chama, the sun. Friday was Levana, the moon. And Shabbat was Madim, which is Mars. 12 hours later, when the sun rises, then if you keep this cycle of 7 hours, which is a cycle of Shabtai, Tzedek, Madim, Chama, Noga, Kochav, Levana, and repeated over and over again, then you'll see that at the beginning of the sunrise on the first day of creation, Chama was in force, which is sun, and explains why it's called Sunday. On day 2, the item that was in force at sunrise was Levana, moon, which explains why it's called Monday, or Moon Day, or in French, Lunday for lunar. Then on day 3, the planet that was in force at sunrise was Ma'adim, which is Mars, which doesn't relate to Tuesday, but the French is Mardi, because it's the day of Mars. And on Wednesday, the sunrise was with Kochav, which is Mercury. Doesn't relate to Wednesday, but it does relate again to the French, which is Mercredi, which is the day of Mercury. And then on Thursday, the sun rises with Tzedek, which is Jupiter. Again, the English date is Thursday, which is more related to the English or the Nordic traditions, but the Latin traditions, like in France, is Jeudi, which is, again, Jupiter day. And then Friday's sun rises with Noga, which is Venus. And again, Friday in English doesn't reflect that, but the French Vendredi does reflect that it's Venus day. And then Shabtai is the one that's in force on sunrise on Shabbat, and that explains Saturday or Saturn. And so the days of the week are actually governed by these orbits that Rashi lays out over here, not at the sunset, which is the beginning of the Jewish day, but at the sunrise, which is interesting, which is that it's not at midnight when the day turns over, according to this layout of the days, but rather at sunrise they saw the day beginning, which an aside might have actually have been the battle between the Mitzrim, which worshipped the sun and the sun god and the daytime, versus the Jewish view, which is the lunar calendar and the start at night. And that might be why the Jews, in opposition, in distinction to the Mitzrim, follow the lunar and not the sun, start at night, not during the morning, so on and so forth. There's much to say about that, but it's interesting over here, based on what we just showed here, how the names of the week in the secular calendar are related to this same cycle that we're speaking about over here. Now, what's interesting about this cycle is that the calculation here uses the view of Shmuel in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which is that the solar year is 365.25 days, which is decently accurate, but not perfect. That's why we have a leap year in the secular calendar every 4 years to make up for that quarter year, like this year where it's February 29th, because of the fact that they need to add in a day to cover for that quarter. But the truth is that that's not enough, because it's not exactly a quarter day. Quarter day would be 6 hours, but the actual solar year is really 365 days, 5 hours and 48 minutes and 45 seconds, which is much closer to the calculation given in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah by Rav Adol, who says that the solar year is 365 days, 5 hours, 997 chalakim and 48 rigayim, which is still about 10 minutes off the actual calculation of the solar year, but is much closer to the calculation than Shmuel, and it is the length of the solar year that we use for the calculation of the interpolation of the calendar to put in the lunar leap years to match up with the solar year. We use actually Rav Ada's calculation, which is more accurate than Shmuel's calculation. So it's interesting over here that when it comes to the Birkat HaChama, that we use the calculation of Shmuel versus Rav Ada Ba'ava. There is a possibility that that has to do with who's calculating it. With Birkat HaChama, that's something that's given to the Hamon Am, and therefore they use Shmuel's calculation of the solar year, which is much easier to calculate and understand. And even though it'll be off by a little bit, still, it's better to do that so that people can understand the calculation and figure out when Birkat HaChama is, versus the issue of the intercalating of the calendar, which is done by Beit Din, and there they can do the more complex calculations that uses Rav Ada's position. Even given Ravada's position, it's off by a little bit, which is actually causing a shift over thousands of years within the Jewish calendar versus the actual seasons and the secular calendar. That's why over many years, there is a shift to the dates falling out later for Yomim Tovim than should be, because of that small differential between the actual solar year and the calculated solar year that we use for the intercalating of the calendar. What's also interesting over here is that the Birkat HaChama takes place in Nisan, which is a machlok between Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Eliezer in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah as to whether the world was created in Nisan or created in Tishrei. According to this, we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua that it was created in Nisan, and that's why we make Birkat HaChama in Nisan. But that then has to be explained why we celebrate Rosh Hashanah in Tishrei rather than in Nisan. And again, that's a much bigger topic, but just something to note over here that Balei Tosafot in Rosh Hashanah already asked that, and say that Allah b'machshavato b'tishrei, but Hashem didn't actually create the world until Nisan, and that's how he solved the problem. And that might be reinforced by the fact that we say on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Harat Olam, that today is the conception of the world, but not necessarily the birth of the world, because it was only conceived on that day, it wasn't actually created on that day. Alright, then the Gemara continues and says, Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Roei Yam Liprakim, he sees it on intervals, ad kama, what's an interval in order for you to see it that you make a bracha? Amarame bar abam Rabbi Yitzchak at 30 yom, that's up to 30 days, which there's a discussion as to whether the 30 days applies only to items that are static, like the Yama Gadol, or does it also apply to other phenomena like lightning and thunder? So many believe that lightning and thunder or other items like that are independent of this, because one lightning bolt that you see now is different than a lightning bolt that you see next time. And therefore, you don't need to wait 30 days because it's a new phenomenon each time. Therefore, you can make a bracha in each instance. Whereas by a mountain or by a body of water, which is static, those you can only make a bracha every 30 days because it's enough time that it's elapsed. It's considered to be a new unit of time because a chodesh or a month is considered to be a significant unit of time. In halachas, a week, a month, and a year are considered to be a significant amount of time, but 30 days is considered to be enough to have elapsed by which a person then would feel or have an emotional experience again, and therefore you'd make a bracha. It's similar to tearing kriya over Churban HaBayit, whereby you only tear kriya if you haven't been there in 30 days. Although even within those phenomena like lightning and thunder, we would assume that if it's in the same storm, or the rainbow was in the same storm, that you wouldn't make a new bracha. You'd have to have a new storm or something new that took place before you could make a new bracha. We wouldn't say in every lightning bolt that you make a bracha. Someone who sees the Euphrates River from this location of the bridge by Bavel, Omer Baruch Oseh Breshit. Then you can make the bracha of that Hashem created the world, because Prat is one of the four rivers that's mentioned that come out of Gan Eden. And the assumption was that only if it was in its original state could you make the bracha. And so they had a Mesorah that below that point from Gishra to Bavel, there were already man-made canals or alterations in the flow of the river, so you couldn't make a bracha. But above that point, the river was still in its original flow, and therefore you can make the bracha of Osem Aseh Breshit. Vayidnan today, Deshanua Parsai, that the Persians have changed it again, meaning that they've now changed or moved the water flow even by Gishra de Bavel, then only me Beis Shabur Liel, only from the area of Beis Shabur and upwards of the river, is it still in its original state, and there you can make the bracha. Yosef Amar, Mi'ihi Dekira Ule'el. No, it's not from Beis Shabur, but rather from this location of Ihi Dekira above, where it's still in its original flow. Ami Rami Baraba Ru'eh Diglat, one who says the Hidekel, or the Tigris River, Agishra de Shvistano, from the bridge of Shvistano, Omer Baruch Hasem Aseh Breshit, the same reason, from that point upwards, the Hidekel, or the Tigris, is still in its original state, and it's one of the four rivers that's mentioned in Gan Eden. My Chidekel. Why is the Diglat, the Tigris, called Chidekel? Amravashi Shememav Chadim Vikalin. Its waters are sharp and swift. Now Rashi explains that they are Chadim is Charifim. Whether that means swift or that means that they are very potent. Vikalin Lishkol Bemoznayim. They weigh less, light. He takes it literally, not that they're moving fast, but rather that it's a lighter type of water. The Gra, on the other hand, sees this as being something positive in terms of its impact on the individual, that it makes a person chad vikal, makes a person sharper and quicker to understand. And my prat, where does the word prat come from? Shememav parim virabim, that its waters either cause people to be fruitful and multiply, or its waters itself are fruitful and multiply, which means that the waters expand and come up and grow and do not diminish. Vamarava, haide charife bnei mechuza. Rava says that the people of Mechuzah are so sharp, because they drink the waters from the Tigris. And the reason that they are freckled or have red spots on them is because they have intercourse during the day. That might have to do with something that we spoke about a number of times in Nidah, which is that what a person sees at the time of conception, according to the Gemara, has impact on that which is produced. Therefore, if they're having intercourse and conception happens during the day when the sun's out and it's light out, that might be what he's trying to imply here. By the night, the reason that their eyes either wander or blink is mishum de dairu bebeite afel. They grow up in very dark houses. In order to not be hot and to keep it shade and keep it cool, they don't allow a lot of light into the house. And because of that, when they come outside, their eyes are always blinking or moving around because they're not used to that type of bright light. Alagish shamim. On rain, you make the bracha. Is that really true that the bracha that you make when you see rain is a tov ve'meitiv? Amar Rabbi Bo, v'amar Ila b'matnita tano. You have Rabbi Bo or in a brayta. When do you make a bracha on geshamim? It's mishiyatzah chatan likrat kala. When the chatan goes to greet the kala, as Rashi explains over here, that means that there's sufficient water that's already pooling on the ground. Never when a drop falls into the pool of water, it bounces up, and then when it bounces up, the next raindrop that comes down meets the one that's bouncing up from the pool of water. And that's what it means, which means it's a significant amount of rain. And what bracha do you make? Amar Rav Yehuda. The bracha you make is Modim Anachnu Lach Al Kol Tipa B'Tipa Shorat Delano. We give thanks to you, Hashem, for every drop of rain that you brought down for us. Rabbi Yochanan Misayim Bahochi, and Rabbi Yochanan continues that bracha with the following: Ilu Finu Malei Shirak Hayam. Even if our mouths were full of song like the ocean, Ein Anuch Masbichim Nadot Lecha Hashem Elokeinu, we would not have sufficient means by which to give thanks to you, Hashem. See, he's quoting Tefillah of Nishmat, Ilufinu Malei Shirak Hayam. And that's why it says V'chulei, because it continues, L'shazneinu Rina, Kamon Galav, Siftoteinu Shevach, K'marchavei Rakia, V'neinu Mirot, K'shemesh V'chayireach, V'edeinu Pusot, K'nishrei Shemaim, Raglenu Kalot Kailot, Ein Achnachnu Maspikim L'dot L'cha, so it's picking up again, Hashem Elokeinu, V'lokei Avoteinu, V'rechet Shemecha, and then he says, Ad Tishtachver, means he continues, Achat Mielef Alfei Alafim Rivei Vavot Famim Atavot Shasitim Abotein Vimanu Mitzrayim Galtanu Hashem Elokeinu Mibet Avedim Piritanu Barav Zantanu Mitzava Kilkaltanu Mecher Vitzaltanu Midever Milatatanu Mechalaim Raim Nemanim Dilitanu Ad Henu Zvuna Rachmecha Velo Zvuna Chasadecha Al Titzushenu Hashem Elokeinu Lenetzach Al Kenem Vrim Shavlach Tubanu Rach Unishama Shnafakta Vepenu Lashona Shasam Tufino Hein Heim Yodu Vivarchu Vyashu Vyabchu Vyarfaru Vyaru Yeroma Vyaru 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 Kol peh lecha yudeh, kol ashon lecha tishava, v'chol berech lecha tichra, v'chol koma lefanecha tishtachave. So that's what he says, you say until there, and then you complete it, Baruch Ata Hashem, Rov Ha'odot. The Gemara says, Rov Ha'odot, below kol Ha'odot. Just on most of the things we want to give you thanks, but not everything we want to give you thanks. Amarava, Eima Hakela Ha'odot. Better to say, the great God, who we all thanks to. So Amar Papa, once again, Rav Papa comes in and says, Hilkach Nimre L'Tovayu. We should say both of them. Rova Odot, Vekela Odot, which is the way that we structure the bracha. So you say Kel Rova Odot. So as the Gemara already points out, that Rova Odot has a deficit in it because of the fact that it only speaks about the Rov and not all. So the solution there to say Kel Odot. But once you're saying Kel Odot, that dismisses the explanation of Rova Odot to mean just the majority, not all. But Rov then means ribui, many. And therefore, Kel Ha'odot would speak about a single thank you. But Rov Ha'odot says that you deserve many, many thanks. And so therefore, what we're trying to do is have the word Rov not mean majority, but rather mean plentiful or many. And the way we do that is by associating it with Kel. And therefore, the deficit in Kel Ha'odot is made up by Rov. And the deficit in Rov is made up by Kel. And therefore, bringing them together actually gets you a better brocha. And that's why we combine them, and that's what Rav does over here. Which is either a conclusion of Rov Ha'odot, Vekel Ha'odot, or the version that we use today, which Ramban also brings down, which is Kel Rov Ha'odot. Whereas there are Rishonim, like the Balamor, the Ritva, and others that say that Rav Papa's Hilkach Nimer L'Tavayu is the Bracha of Modim and Ilupinu Malei Shira. Meaning that's both the bracha of Rav Yehuda and the addition of Rav Yochanan, but that doesn't change the closing of the bracha, and the closing of the bracha should just be a Kel Ha'odot. So now we have a problem because we have this bracha, and we have the Mishnah telling us that the bracha is a Tova Meitiv. Elikasha. So what are we going to do about that? Lokasha. Hadashama Mishma. Hadachaza Mikzei. Depends if he heard that it rained, or he saw that it rained. The Shama Mishma Hainu Besoro Tovot. It says, wait a minute, Hashama Mishma, that you're going to make a Tova Meitiv when you hear about it, that's already included in another category in the Mishnah, which is good news. When you hear good news, you make a bracha of it. It's not a B'serot Torot, Omer, Baruch HaTova Meitiv. On good news, you make a Tova Meitiv, so why do you need a separate bracha by the rain? Both of them are a case where you witness the rain. Lokasha, that's not a problem. Hada'ata Purta, Hada'ata Tuva. Depends if it rained a lot or it rained a little bit. The way that Rashi explains it over here is that if it rains a little bit, then you say the bracha of a modim anachnu lach. If it rains a lot, then you say the bracha of a tov v'ameitiv. Although the Ritva over here explains just the opposite and says that if there's a lot of rain, like the Gemara said before, she had say chatan nikrat kala, then you say the bracha of modim, because that's what the rov ha'odot goes on in the great amount of rain that's coming. Whereas if it just rains a little bit, then you say bracha tamotov v'ameitiv. Now obviously that will have implications on the remainder of the Gemara. Gemara says, v'ibaitema ha'baha da'atatuva. According to Rashi, ha'baha da'atatuva is both cases is a case where there's a lot of rain. That's when you make both brachot, v'lokasha. And the question of which bracha you make is a question of whether it le'ara. If you have land, then you make a bracha of a tova meitiv. Hadalei le'ara, if you don't have land, then you make the bracha of a modim anachnu lach. So according to Rashi, hadadatatuva means that you can make a bracha of a tov Vametiv and Lokasho, when you make a Toba Metiv, when you have land. Halei they are, if you don't have land, then you make the bracha of Modim and Achnu Lach. But the implications of that are, that means that both when there's a little amount of rain, or a lot of rain, if you don't own land, you're gonna make the bracha of Modim and Achnu Lach. The Ritva is gonna be just the opposite. Explanation of Havad, the Tzuva means, that unless there's a lot of rain, you can't say either of the brachot. Both bracha of Modim and Achnu Lach and Toba Metiv require a lot of rain, and the difference between them is whether you own land or don't own land. If you own land, then you can make a bracha of a Toba Metiv. If you don't own land, you make the bracha of Modim and Achnu Lach. So according to both Rashi and the Ritva in the end, it has to be that the Toba Metiv is referring to when you have a lot of rain and you own land. The only question is, if you don't own land, then you say Modim and Achnu Lach. Is that only true when you have a lot of rain? That's the view of the Ritva. Or is that even true when you have a small amount of rain, which is the view of Rashi? But either way, the Gemara asks, it le'ara Toba Metiv mivarech? Someone has land, they make the bracha of a Tov v'Metiv. How come it's only when you have land that you make a bracha of a Toba Metiv? Ha, Tanya, don't we have a brighter? It is somewhat in our mission as well, which is Bana Bayit Chadash, Bekana Kelim Chadashim. If someone builds a new house or requires new utensils, Omer Baruch Shechianu V'Kimianu V'Yanu L'Zman Hazeh. So then you make the Baruch of Shechianu. Now the Gra takes out the remainder of this Girs over here, Shelo B'Shel Acherim. If it's his and others, then Omer Atov V'Meitiv. You make the Baruch of the Meitiv. Gemar says, Halukasha, that's not a problem. Hadit Le'Shutfut. Hadalet Le'Shutfut. Depends if he has a partner or not. The way that many of the Rishonim learned that you have a partner means literally that you have a partner in the property. Since you have a partner in the property, both of you are beneficiaries, and therefore you say Atov Ametiv. Rashi says that that doesn't necessarily mean that you have a literal partner in the property, but you have a partner in the benefits that are felt by that which is happening. And therefore other landowners, just like you, are beneficiaries of the rain. And therefore you can say Atov Ametiv because it's something that affects you and others equally. And since you're all beneficiaries of this, you can say the bracha of Atov Ametiv. V'adanyol. We have a braita, which has been nichuta, supported braita. Tzaro shel davar, in summary, or the principle that's here is, ashalo, if it's his, or he's the beneficiary of the tova, omer baruch shechiyanu v'kimanu v'yanu l'zman hazeh, ashalo v'ashal chaviro, something that it benefits him and his friend, whether that literally means you have to be partners in it, or whether it means that you are equal beneficiaries of that which happened, omer baruch atov v'meitiv. It says, v'chol heicha deleite achvina badei, lo mevarech atov v'meitiv. Is that true? When he doesn't have anybody else along with him, you don't make a bracha atov v'meitiv. Atanyo, don't we have a bright? Amrule yalda ishto zachar. He finds out that his wife gave birth to a male child, omer baruch atov v'meitiv. Over there, he's the beneficiary. He's the one who's celebrating. How come he's making atov v'meitiv? It's just him. Hatonami ika ishto badei. His wife also is celebrating the nechalav zachar because she also wanted a male child. So the two of them together make the bracha of atov v'meitiv. The implications of that are, and what is halachically true, is that if it was a daughter that was born, you'd make a bracha of Shechianu, and not a Tova Meitiv. Tashma. So let's see, over here, Meit Aviv, who your show. His father passes away, and he's inheriting him. B'tchilo Omer Baruch Dayan Emet. First he says Baruch Dayan Emet, which is the first news that he heard that his father passed away. Therefore the proper or appropriate bracha for that is Dayan Emet. Ublesov, afterwards, Omer Baruch HaTova Meitiv, over the Yerusha that he's getting. But once again here, he's the only recipient of the Yerusha, so why is he making bracha Tova Meitiv? He has other brothers that are inheriting with him, and therefore there's more than one beneficiary, and that's why he can make a bracha of a Tova Meitiv. Now that bracha of a Tova Meitiv in that case, or Shechianu in the case where it only fell to him, is only true where he didn't have any awareness of the Yerusha that was coming. It was sudden or a surprise to him, then he makes the bracha. But if he knew that his parents had that wealth and that he was expecting to get that Yerusha, then you don't make a bracha on it because it's not something that came as a surprise. Or you make a bracha of Tova Meitiv because there's a certain amount of simcha that needs to be engendered in order to make such a bracha. Tashmash, you know, yayin ain't zarech tavarech. If you change wines, then you don't need to make a new bracha. Shinu mokom, if you change the place where you're drinking, you need to make a new bracha. So if you take out a new barrel of wine or a new type of wine, you don't need to make another bracha. If you change the location where you are, you need to make new Bari Priya Guffin. It's true that when you have new bottles of wine or new barrels of wine, you don't need to make a new bracha. That's the bracha Bari Priya Guffin. You do say a bracha of Hatov Meitiv. And again here, you're just drinking new wine. Why is it that you're getting Tova Meitiv? You're the only one who's benefiting from it. It's not drinking alone, he's drinking with others. And therefore there are other beneficiaries to this new wine that's coming up. And therefore you make a Tov Vameitiv. And that's what Tosafot codifies the halacha, that you only make a bracha of Tova Meitiv when there are others drinking the wine along with you. And that's why if you have a new fruit, You make a bracha of Shechianu, both because of the fact that it's a seasonal item, and therefore the appropriate bracha of Shechianu v'kimenu v'yiganu z'man hazeh, as well as the fact it's a personal benefit, it's not something that generally is shared b'chabura. The Ran brings in the name of the Raivud that this does not only have application by wine, but it also has application by bread and by basar. When you have riboy basar, riboy of yilechem, these are the ikar part of the meal, then those items where there's new items that are brought out, then you would make a bracha of a tova meitiv. You could see in the Balei HaTosafot, they disagree with that and they dispel that notion, but they say dafka yain, dit beit harte, only by wine, which has two aspects to it. The said, that it has a satiating factor to it, umisameach, and it causes happiness. Mivarchim a tova meitiv. That's where you make a bracha of tova meitiv. A basar v'lechem, lo. But not with basar v'lechem. Then there's a machlok between the brothers, the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu Tam, as to whether the next wine that you bring out has to be better. The Rashbam believes that you have to have an upgrade in the wine in order for it to be a bracha of a tova meitiv. But if the wine is the same level or a lower level of wine, then there's no reason to make a bracha of a tova meitiv, because there's no added simcha to the situation. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that even if the new wine isn't as chashuv, as long as it's not a big degradation from the original wine, but it's a new wine, the addition of the wine itself is the simcha, and that's enough of a reason to make a tova meitiv, even though there's no upgrade in the quality of the wine. There is a machloket amongst the Rishonim, if for whatever reason you need to make a bari priya gofen on the next wine, which is a different wine, do you also then make a bracha of a tova meitiv on it? That might have to do with the question as to what the nature of the bracha of a tova meitiv is. Is it just a modified birkat hananin? And because you already made a bari priya gofen, you can't make it again, so a tova meitiv is this modified birkat hananin. That's the case, then clearly, if you have to make another bari priya gofen, you're not going to make a tova meitiv, because you don't make two birkat hananin on a single object. On the other hand, if you believe that birkat tova meitiv is really a bracha of shevach v'hoda'ah to Hashem, then in that case, it might be that even if you have to make a new bari priya gofen on the second wine, you would still make a bracha of a tova meitiv, because not only are you making the birkat hananin, but the addition of this new wine, especially if it's an upgraded wine, also requires an additional bracha of shevach v'hoda'ah. And that may also be influential as to whether you can make a tova meitiv after you've already drank the wine. Meaning that if it's a birkat hananin, it's clearly has to be done before you drink the wine. If it's a birkat shevach v'hoda'ah, there's not necessarily a necessity to have it be overly asiyatan. And therefore you might be able to say it even after you've already had a sip of the wine. Although the Shaar Tzion and Kuf Ayin Hei, Otvet, points out that even according to those that believe that it's shevach v'hoda'ah, the mere fact that you're making a bari priya gofen over here detaches it from the previous wine. And by having the detachment from the previous drinking, by definition, you can't make a tova meitiv, because tova meitiv is all a relative bracha, or an association between two different wines, or the riboy yayin. If you make a bari priya gofen, that already separates it from the original wine, and therefore, even according to those that think it's birkat shevach v'hoda'ah, you also would not say it when you have the bracha of bari priya gofen. Although there, in Ot Gimel, he has a big chiddush that on the night of the Seder, where you have the Arba Kosot, if you change the wine in the second kos, even though you're making a new bari priya gofen over there, the reason you're making a bari priya gofen over there is because it's a separate mitzvah, not because you're separating it from the original drinking. In that case, maybe you should be able to make a tova meitiv, even though you've made a bari priya gofen. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Nuntet Amud Bet.